I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the Middle East. Today, the World Court is scheduled to begin a two-day hearing brought by Nicaragua against Germany over its role in the Gaza genocide. The Central American nation, infamously destabilized by U.S. death squads, is accusing Europe's most powerful economy of facilitating the commission of genocide by providing political, financial and military support to Israel. Tomorrow, Pentagon boss Lloyd Austin will appeal to Congress for more weapons after billions of dollars worth have been used against Palestine. Joining me now from Tel Aviv is a longtime columnist to the Israeli newspaper Haaretz and author of The Punishment of Gaza, Gideon Levy. Thank you so much, Gideon, for coming on the show. We do want you back in October when your new book is out. But over the past few days, media in NATO nations continually and progressively blaming Netanyahu as the problem as regards the genocide. It's wider Israeli society, isn't it, based on polls? Not I know you're not an apologist for Netanyahu, but do you think they're wrong to single Netanyahu out in this way, as is coming out of the White House and in NATO media and from Western European politicians?
My main dispute in the last year or so with my fellow leftists or so-called leftists is about Netanyahu, because the remains of the Israeli peace camp believes that if we only get rid of Netanyahu, then Israel will turn into a paradise, the occupation will come to its end, the settlements will be displaced, and the apartheid will come to its end, and even the war in Gaza will come to its end. And I never believed in this. The problem, by all means, is not Netanyahu. Netanyahu has to go. His government is a horrible government, but the alternative is not much better. It is better, but it's not much better, for sure not in the core issues of apartheid, occupation, and continuing this war.
So what is the state of Israeli society? Because they seem contradictory. Most Israelis don't believe an absolute victory is possible. They support the wiping out of Hamas. We had Professor Mersheimer of Chicago University on Saturday's program. He's quoting a poll, 70% oppose humanitarian aid to Gaza, and simultaneously 31% face food insecurity in Israel. Just give us your interpretation of the state of Israeli society as the whole world condemns it for genocide.
Not in its best point. The 7th of October really changed things here in terms of the legitimization of all kinds of sentiments which were not legitimate before. Namely, the furious feelings and sentiments which were justified after the 7th of October of most of the Israelis, if not all of them, turned into a not only lack of hope, but really thirst for revenge, for punishing Gaza, for punishing all Gaza, not only Hamas, for doing anything, but anything without any restraints to punish Hamas, punish Gaza for the atrocities and the crimes on the 7th. No empathy, not only no empathy to Gaza, any embassy is almost criminalized in Israel. You might go to jail in Israel now, especially if you are not Jewish, if you pay any kind of embassy with the victims of Gaza. If you say anything about the 12,000 children killed, this by itself is almost a crime in Israel today. Israel really, I don't know if Israel changed, but the political correctness changed on the 7th of October. And from now on, the political correctness allows anything to say, to do after the 7th of October.
So as an act of political violence, it was effective. I mean, clearly the bravest journalists are the ones that have been killed, arguably, in Gaza. So many from Al Jazeera, so many from so many other outlets. In Britain over Ukraine, RT has been banned, Chinese TV, Iranian TV. What's it like being a journalist like you are in Israel? How brave do you have to be? I could see on your X timeline the kind of attacks for your columns in Haaretz.
So first of all, I'm privileged to be a Jew. I'm privileged to write in Haaretz, which is still a well-established newspaper. So I don't have any problems whatsoever, neither with the government, nor with the secret services, the army. They all answer my questions. I mean, I'm really privileged. I don't take it for granted, by the way. But until now, I'm really having a full freedom of speech. The only inconvenience is to walk in the streets of Tel Aviv or other cities and to hear the remarks of people. But I'm so used to it, so really, I cannot complain. It's not about me.
So it's not got noticeably worse as the population clearly, I mean, given 70% oppose even humanitarian aid and, 14,000 children have been killed and you're continually talking about and using the phrase apartheid. It hasn't got noticeably worse for your safety.
On the contrary, in 2014, I needed bodyguards, and now I feel quite secure, I must tell you. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel quite secure in the streets. It's now all channeled into the social media, and all the hatred is there.
Okay, that's a great advert for social media in sublimating violence then. Yeah. What about this, NATO powers pouring in the billions of dollars of weapons are quite open about how it helps their own economies at home as the money is recycled through the military-industrial complexes in Western European and US nations after the mass murder of civilians and babies in Gaza. But then you get from the National Insurance Institute of Israel a statistic like 31% in food insecurity in Israel. They're not making money at all out of this war on Gaza. What are those working classes who face food insecurity in Israel thinking? Are they even more belligerent and bellicose against the civilians of Gaza?
Unfortunately, yes, but in this war, there is almost a consensus of any kind of inhuman measures toward Gaza. But yes, the lower classes are traditionally more nationalistic in Israel and hating much more the Palestinians. It's always like this when you are frustrated socially, when you are oppressed socially, you express everything against those who are beneath you, and who else is beneath them if not the Palestinians?
And of course, in NATO propaganda media, they talk about Israel being the only democracy in the Middle East.
All over the world, they still define it as the only democracy in the Middle East, which is really quite ridiculous. I mean, when you have half of the population which lives under your authority without any rights, when Israel can be defined, at least in the occupied territories, nothing but an apartheid state, to call this a democracy and the only democracy in the Middle East is quite ridiculous. But maybe this war will open the eyes of many people in the world who will realize that this was a myth.
Yeah, but what does it mean to Israelis who, say, read the newspapers that most Americans are now against Israel, that Israel and Israeli Jews are incredibly isolated, more isolated globally than they ever have been since the creation of this state?
Israeli society is maybe the society which have a world record in denial. We surrounded ourselves with all kinds of protection walls. One of them is the belief that the whole world hates Israel, no matter what Israel does, and the whole world is anti-Semitic, no matter what Israel is doing. So this is quite an effective protection. It's either self-hating Jews or anti-Semites who define us, whatever they define us, who fight us the way they fight us, but we are totally clean. We are so sure about our justice, about the fact that the IDF, the Israeli armed forces, are the most moral army in the world. This conviction cannot be scratched in Israel.
I mean, you were in the IDF, of course. Is it clear to you that the strike on Iran's embassy in Damascus was an attempt at drawing the United States in, given that Israel can't beat off resistance movements on towards Yemen, towards Lebanon, and so on?
Look, Israel is doing whatever it can without looking at the consequences. I mean, if you can assassinate somebody or can do some kind of James Bond operation, which everyone praises, then we do it. And nobody thinks about the consequences, and the consequences are usually never positive. I mean, from all the assassinations that Israel did in the past, the outcome was always a replacement of more extreme activists, leaders, officers, terrorists, whatever you call them. But, you know, that's the way that Israel chose. It's a very dangerous way. And right now, I think Israel is really playing with fire, as we say in Hebrew. It can explode in any moment. It can be extremely dangerous, not only for Israel, for the entire region and maybe for the entire world. We are not playing now around. This is a very, very sensitive time.
There was a time when only the whistleblower Mordecai Vanunu used to talk about nuclear weapons in Israel. He's under house arrest, I understand, after his infamous honey trap kidnapping in London. Were you surprised that an Israeli cabinet minister could, was he serious, in your opinion, talk about Israel's nuclear weapons and the use of them against the people of Gaza?
Sure, he was right, but I want to point out that one of my colleagues mentioned the other day that the casualties of Gaza are now more than the casualties of Nagasaki from...
Three Hiroshimas, I understand.
Not yet Hiroshima, but Nagasaki. We are getting into Hiroshima's figures. So maybe Israel does not need, for sure not against Gaza, Israel does not need any nuclear weapons. It's enough what it's doing on the ground.
Gideon Levy, I'll stop you there. More from the Haaretz columnist and author of The Punishment of Gaza after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the Haaretz columnist and author of The Punishment of Gaza, Gideon Levy. Gideon, we were talking about Israeli nuclear weapons and the fact that the equivalent TNT rating has been used on Gaza. Does that mean that when they're talking about nuclear weapons, it could be against other states in a wider conflict? We've seen Britain and the United States airstrike on Yemen for showing solidarity with Palestinians, given their arms embargo or shipping embargo of Israel. Do you think that's being talked about in the Israeli cabinet?
I don't think so. I mean, it's more, most of the expression of the Israeli politicians are aimed at the domestic politics, are aimed at their political basis. Most of them are so much not serious. And this maybe speaks for in favor of them, because they are so much not serious that they shouldn't be taken serious, even though when they threat with nuclear weapons and other things, those people are really playing games with their base in order to be reelected in the next primaries in their party. Nothing more than this.
Well, the enablers talk a lot as well. As you know, Blinken and Sullivan are still talking about a Saudi-Israel rapprochement. Do you think ordinary Israelis care about making friends with Saudi Arabia? Or is this really an American illusion that they want to progress right up till their elections in November?
No, I don't think that ordinary Israelis are preoccupied now with peace with Saudi, yes or no. Obviously, any peace treaty will be welcomed here, especially if Israel doesn't have to pay any price, like it was in the Abraham Accords, in which Israel didn't pay anything for having peace with another three or four Arab countries. The issue right now is to conclude this war, to bring back the hostages, to get back to normality. I must remind you that there are over 100,000 Israelis who are replaced from the places, and they are still living in hotels all over Israel. The main concern in Israel is obviously the domestic problems.
I mean, polls also show that Israelis would rather wipe out Hamas than get the captives back. There's no sign of the captives clearly being released, given that they won't release the Palestinian captives. And all those people that have had to evacuate in case of Hezbollah firing, there's no sign of them going back either. I mean, has it been a complete failure in strategic terms, let alone the fact that now Israel will be, I suppose, punished in words from a world court as regards genocide?
It's good you say in words, because I don't see the world taking measures against Israel. It will be only words, and Israel learned already by now to live with those words, with those condemnations. You can ignore them so easily after so many years that the world only talked about Israel and never took measures. Israelis couldn't care less about those condemnations. But in any case, it is really about the international community to decide what the international community wants in this part of the world. Do they really want a war every 2-3 years, which endangers the security all over the world? Do they really want the continuance of the apartheid and occupation, which will never be accepted by the Palestinians or by others? Would they really like to live in this reality in which they only speak and do nothing, while when Russia is invading Crimea, within weeks, we can witness sanctions, and quite serious sanctions? So all this is about the international community, because people like me believe that the only hope for real change must come from the international community. It will not come from within Israel. No way.
Well, the international community is clearly against Israel. It's just those Western powers as part of the international community that look the other way. But then how prepared is Israeli civic society for a wider war? You know, some people call Israel JSIL, like ISIS or ISIL. Do they think that they're all willing to die if indeed Yemen, Iran, Lebanese resistance movement said enough is enough, we'll take Israel out for what it's done to the millions of people in Gaza?
First of all, I don't think this is going to happen. And most of the Israelis don't think that this is going to happen. Because fortunately or unfortunately, it depends on the one who said it, on the beholder. Israel is still very, very strong, much stronger than all its neighbors.
But as long as the weapons keep coming, right? Right. The U.S.
But I see that the weapons keep on coming, even though all the condemnations, including the Biden administration, he keep on supplying Israel with weapons. He never stopped for a moment.
But then the Israeli civic society recognizes that it is totally reliant on the weapons coming from Britain, the European Union and the United States to continue the war against its neighbors.
Look, the Israeli society is really right now so brainwashed and so blind. I mean, it is like this for many years, but now even more so. Most of the Israelis believe that not only we are the biggest victims around, we are the only victims around. There are no other victims but us. I mean, those 1,200 people who were murdered in a very brutal way on the 7th of October, this is the only sacrifice in this war.
There are honorable exceptions, of course, like yourself. Why weren't you brainwashed?
I was brainwashed. I was a good boy Tel Aviv for many years. I was brainwashed like anyone else. You should have listened to me when I was 18 or 20 or even 25. I never heard the word Nakba. I never asked what are those ruins along the roads in Israel. Whom do they belong, those ruins? And where are those people who lived in those beautiful villages who turned into ruins? I knew nothing. It's only when I started quite in the late 80s to travel to the occupied territories gradually when I realized that I was fooled for so many years.
And when was the epiphany that you realized that you'd been lied to, and presumably you believe the people of Israel are being lied to from an early age right now?
No, this was a process. There is no moment in which I saw the light or the darkness. It was an ongoing process which continues until this very moment. 35 years of documenting the crimes of the occupation week after week must have an effect on me, and they did have an effect on me, and they are still having an effect on me week after week, day after day.
Just explain why a one-state solution is the only solution for the Palestinian question.
I don't believe that Israel is ready for any kind of solution. One state, two state, nothing. I believe that the two-state solution is a very just solution. The only problem is that this is a train that left the station a long time ago and is not implementable. When I say the two-state solution is dead, I don't say necessarily that it was ever born. But in any case, with 700,000 settlers in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, Jewish settlers, there's no room for a viable Palestinian state. There is a room for a Bantustan. But as long as the Jewish supremacy is there, and Zionism is there, and the belief that the Jews deserve more than any other people, as long as this continues, there is no room for a real, equal, just Palestinian state. And therefore, when the two-state solution is dead, and I don't see it otherwise, what's left? We are living in a one state for over 50 years now. The only problem is that it's not a democracy. And the struggle should be over the regime of this state. The state is there. People in Gaza and people in Jenin are living under the Israeli, not sovereignty, but under Israeli rule. And the only thing that should be changed is the regime. It's a long way to go, but at least we have a vision. We have a direction. We have something to look forward. While in the two-state solution, what can you look forward? Just travel in the West Bank and see how the settlements took over every piece of land. Nothing left for a viable Palestinian state.
Can you see how your invocation of the word apartheid for Israel means that historical parallels can be drawn with the political violence of the ANC and Nelson Mandela? So was October the 7th really that surprising, given that any apartheid state should expect acts like October the 7th?
No, it wasn't a surprise. It was a surprise in terms of the capability of the Hamas. It was a surprise of the impotence of the Israeli army. There was no Israeli army on the 7th. Nevertheless, all the enormous resources which were spent in the army, finally, there was no army around. They built this unbelievable barrier under the ground between Gaza and Israel. They were sure that this guarantees everything. And finally, a couple of hundreds of Palestinians riding bicycles and motorcycles cross the fence as if it doesn't exist. So this was really unbelievable, and in this way it was a surprise. But nobody should be surprised that the people of Gaza will never give up and never surrender.
What do you expect a five-year-old survivor who's had his family wiped out in Gaza, what advice would you give them? And what do you expect they will do to Israel in their thousands in the coming years?
It's very hard to say. I mean, I don't see any hope for them. And I would recommend them to look for shelter anywhere in the world. Not that I don't appreciate the sumud, this way of staying on your land and struggle, but the chances are very poor. Israel is by far very strong yet. The world is...
That is what the apartheid regime said to the ANC, of course, in hiding.
Yeah, but you must remember one difference. In South Africa, it was 8% or 9% against 91%. Here we are dealing with 50-50, 7.5 million Palestinians, 7.5 million Israelis. We are dealing with a very powerful country which is supported by the West, which is the darling of the West, which, until now at least, is well equipped, no country in the world gets the same support like Israel, for sure not from the United States. And when I say support, it includes everything. And you know, all those last declarations of Biden and condemnations don't change the basic situation in which Israel is the darling of the West. South Africa was never the darling of the West, white South Africa.
It was a while. Was for a long time.
Yes, but not in the same scale. You can't compare it. And there was a very active international movement against South Africa. In actions, not in talks. There were sanctions, very effective ones. Nobody dares even to mention the word sanctions when it comes to Israel.
Gideon Levy, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to the survivors of US, UK, EU nation armed killing in Palestine, Syria, Yemen, Lebanon, Iraq, and Iran. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.